So,
You.
like, sure. Okay. Can we come to order? Have a roll call?
Yes, roll call. Director Bilodeau, Director Tran,
Present.
Director Yeo,
Here.
Director Whitaker, Director Sheldon, Director Mezquia,
Present.
Director Meeks, Director Nguyen,
Here.
Director Wigand, Director Green,
Yes.
do you have a quorum of your committee?
Okay. Do we have any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
All righty. Visitor participation. Would anybody like to speak? We'll listen. Doesn't look like it. Okay. Can we move on to the consent calendar, the minutes? Do we have a motion?
Move to approve by Tran.
Do we have a
Second.
second? Okay, Roger, second.
Okay.
Okay.
Roll call. Director Tran.
Yes.
Director Yeo.
Yes.
Director Mezquia.
Yes.
Director Nguyen.
Yes.
Director Green.
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Okay, State Ledge.
We have Jason Gonzalez, who will provide a brief update.
Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair, and thank you for the opportunity. I will be brief. I'll start with the good news. The legislature adjourned August 31st. They are gone until December, absent they met this last Monday for an extraordinary session on oil refinery reserves, and the Senate will be coming in the next week or so, also on oil refinery reserves. So there's an extraordinary session at play, but the ordinary session, the legislature has adjourned. They adjourned not after, or they adjourned after having sent 1,206 bills to Governor Newsom. The governor signed 1,017 of those and vetoed 189, about a 15.7% veto rate. That's consistent with a 15% veto rate over the last 10 years. None more exciting than the legislation the governor seems to be getting quite a bit of attention on. Not to digress too much, but if you want to go to the Clippers arena and drink until 4 in the morning, you can do so if you're one of the fortunate 100 that sit in the luxury suites. But again, without digressing too much, that's just, it's a piece of legislation that's getting quite a bit of statewide and national attention. The end of session was rather chaotic because with the presidential nomination change on the Democratic side, members of the legislature left the week prior to adjournment, about 30 of them, to go to the Democratic convention for in support of Kamala Harris. And so that kind of created a pressure cooker as things wound down on 1,206 bills. Just very briefly, as you know, all 80 assembly members will be up for election in November. 20 of the 40 members of the Senate will be up. I only bring up those numbers to highlight that we'll have 35 new members sworn in the first week of December, coupled with 37 new members from 2022. 72 of the 120 members of the legislature will have served 2 years or less. I know Alicia's noted on the action items, continuing to build Orange County Water District's presence in Sacramento will be critically important as we have a new crop of legislators coming in December and kicking things off in January. One other thing to note on the ballot, just the climate bond, as you know, will be on the ballot. It's $10 billion if approved by the voters. That obviously could create some opportunities for funding for the district, and we'll be watching and preparing for that, depending on its outcome in November. So with that, I will stop there. And again, the good news is they're out of Sacramento. They're now back in the district. So I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Any questions? Yes.
I just want to make a comment that we worked really well with the language of the climate bond, working with associations and legislators. So there is language in the draft climate bond that, if it's passed by the voters, will support funding for Sunset Gap project, which is great. And that was just based on the meeting we had with the legislator that was interested in helping us.
Nice. Anything else? I don't see any hands. Okay, we don't need any action. Moving on to Fed, to the federal.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Madam President. So a couple of very quick hits to take on Jason's point. The members are back in the district also from Washington. Will be until mid-November, on or around November 14th, or 13th, excuse me. Members will be back in D.C. for the lame duck session. A couple of high point issues that have transpired over the last 30 days. First and foremost, Director Bilodeau was in Washington, and we had a handful of meetings, including with Representative Correa and Representative Kim. The takeaway from those meetings, I have to give Director Bilodeau credit. He gave a solid presentation on PFAS liability issues. And I would say with Representative Kim, she responded by saying she is 100% supportive of what the district is trying to accomplish. And she is going to be there for the district going forward on PFAS cleanup effort needs. I think that's great. Similar presentation was given to Representative Correa, and he expressed support. Director Bilodeau did make statements about the necessity of supporting the PFAS liability bill protections for water agencies in the House, H.R. 7944. And following his meetings, Representative Correa officially became a co-sponsor of that bill, which is wonderful because we keep building more Democratic support for the legislation, which is really important because even if the bill doesn't make it through the legislative meat grinder this year, it'll be back next year. And having the congressman's support is really important. And then Representative Kim directed her staff to take a look at the bill so that she could consider signing on as a co-sponsor also. So all really good news. I do want to turn attention. Oh, and I should parenthetically state that Director Bilodeau also quickly went through all the pending federal legislative priorities for the Water District, and they were met with positive reactions, and staff are ready and willing to support our efforts going forward. And on that point, going forward on appropriations, as you have already learned in the past couple of weeks, that the House went out and the Senate went out after approving a continuing resolution that will extend till December 20th to keep the federal government open. We have spoken to the Appropriations Committee staff on the Senate side about what's next, because the Senate's going to play an oversized role in determining how the funding bills get put together. And because the Senate always can be a bottleneck because of the filibuster if it isn't orchestrated correctly. So what the Senate committee staff said was that we are looking at getting something done by December 20th. However, the spending differences between the Senate numbers and the House numbers are so great that it's going to be a very difficult slog to get to compromise, and the time is very limited. So they said, keep your fingers crossed. We will try our best to get something done, but it's entirely possible that we could have a second continuing resolution that would carry us into the new year after December 20th, if consensus cannot be agreed upon. That being said, earmarks are alive and well in any final agreement. I don't see that becoming a subject of compromise. So the pending appropriation for the PFAS cleanup remains alive. The question is, when will it become law? And it'll either be done right before Christmas, or unfortunately, we'll see it go into the new year. That is where we're at right now, Madam Chair. And so I'm happy to answer any questions. It's obviously it's a quiet time in Washington.
Any questions?
Yes, I just have a comment. Thank you, guys. You reached out well to legislative staff. They're already scheduling district tours. So this month we'll be hosting Congresswoman Young Kim's staff for tours. So
nice. Jobs. Okay. All right, we don't need any action, so we can move on to the state and federal legislative goals and strategy.
So every year we just review our goals and strategy and we make changes. We cross out the items that we've achieved and we add new things. So what I'm going to do is I'm reaching out to all the key staff at Orange County Water District and also our state and federal consultants to get input. And then we're also going to reach out to our legislative, our retail water agencies and cities. for their input. So that'll be something we want to kind of hold off on making the changes until the new elections, because it really will affect our strategy and also our goals going forward. So that's just something that we're starting the process, and I'll be reaching out to all of you at some point.
Okay.
All right. Any questions? Any comments? I don't see any. All right. Moving on to the tour and educational programs.
Thank you, Chair Green. So we have a presentation from Kira Urquiaga, who manages our tour program here at the district. So OCWD's always had a really robust tour program when it comes to the GWS and showing our other facilities. That continues today. We have pivoted to a virtual and in-person format, but we wanted to give the board an update on kind of the tour numbers, who's coming. There's still vast interest on a global level here at OCWD. So we'll just highlight a brief look at the tour program, the numbers, and then some things we have planned. So, Kira, I'm going to take it over. Thank you. I'll hide this. Okay.
Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to come and just give you a brief update on what's happening with the tour program and a component of our educational programs. So we have seen a marked increase in attendance of our in-person tours of the groundwater replenishment system post-pandemic. This past fiscal year, we conducted 135 tours of the groundwater replenishment system for over 2,500 guests. So that is double the number from the past year. So it's very promising to see everyone welcomed back and interested in coming back and touring the facility. We continue to have a very wide range of stakeholders who are interested in coming to tour the groundwater replenishment system. We obviously get elected officials, as Alicia just mentioned. A lot of industry professional groups come through, or smaller groups. We have a very robust international presence from international groups all over the globe. Corporate leaders come and bring their organizations in a wide range, as much as variety as Taco Bell and their sustainability division and Disneyland. We have a lot of community groups, small general public interested in them. So a lot of community groups and homeowners association type things. So that's always a very big audience for us. A lot of academic institutions, and then conference groups are a big draw for us too. We have a lot of local conferences in the area, as you know, things like water reuse and AWWA. So not only do they often schedule a tour of the attendees to come, so a large group, but a lot of people who are coming, a lot of organizations who are coming for the conference will schedule separate ones and individual ones. So that really keeps us busy during those conference weeks. This is just a little snapshot of showing you some of the range as well. Again, academics, we get a lot of draw from the local universities. An interesting point is the nursing programs in our region. All over Southern California, the nursing programs have incorporated tours of the groundwater replenishment system into their curriculum. So we have a very active participation of tour programs from the nurses.
Why nursing?
I mean, public health. I question that myself. So it's the interest in public health and that component of it, and safety and water quality. So it's quite interesting, but very, very active. So this is just another snapshot showing you some of the numbers. We had over 219 international guests this past year. We welcomed back, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in a moment, but the middle and high school programs, 672 students of that age group came through. Again, the nursing students, as I mentioned. We have a lot of public interest, so we do offer the tours for small groups between 10 and 30 with some flexibility. But for people who want to come, maybe just one or two people, we do offer quarterly public tours that we open up, and individuals can sign up for those. And we have seen in this past fiscal year a very, very active participation in the public tours. And I just want to mention the groundwater replenishment, the groundwater adventure tour. We brought that back in person last year, and we are about to do our next one October 24th. And that is a very popular tour. We can hold 105 people. And we tour not only the groundwater replenishment system, but all of our facilities, Prado and the recharge facilities. But we were able to sell out, as it were. It's free, so we're not selling it. But and within 48 hours, the tour was full. Very, very popular tour program. And we have already 30 people on the wait list for that. And we also opened it up for the first time to employees on a wait list. Where, because this is for the general public, employees aren't included on the invitation list. However, there are times that people don't show up that morning. And so we have a pool of about 10 employees as it is now who have some flexibility and can join us. I do want to transition now and talk a little bit about one of our educational programs, the Next Generation Water Leaders, which is specifically for the middle and high school students. We started that program in 2017, and it was very popular. We were gaining a lot of momentum in that program, and it brought the students out here to tour the groundwater replenishment system and then did some interactive activities. We, of course, had to suspend the in-person tours during the pandemic, and we transitioned to a virtual format, which was very successful and managed to allow us to keep reaching out to that age group. But we saw declining interest in the virtual format from the schools and teachers post-pandemic. And so this past year, we were able to welcome back the schools and students, and I mentioned those numbers earlier, and there is overwhelming interest in the program. So we do need to update the program to meet those educational standards and really maximize student engagement. So we are working on that, and I'll touch on that in a minute as well. We just wanted to include this so that you could see how not only the numbers show that how popular the tour program is, but that what people are saying after the tours. Very, very appreciative of the tours. And as we mentioned, we do a wide range of them, from the general public to a more general format, to very technical tours, which our technical team offers. So what this means for next steps is enhancing the groundwater replenishment system program, assuming that we are going to continue growing those numbers exponentially. We are exploring updates to the tour displays, both in the learning center in the hallway, as well as throughout the GWRS plant. With the final expansion, we definitely need to do some updates of information that are out there. So we are working on that, and we are looking to expand and enhance a little bit with some more dynamic and interactive displays, not only, as I mentioned, in the hallway, but throughout the plant. We are seeing a lot of other agencies who are launching reuse projects throughout the state or other areas, doing visitor centers because they're marketing to their communities, and some of these visitor centers are very elaborate and have a lot of interactive displays. So we are wanting to continue to adapt and attract stakeholders to ours, which is we are the leader, obviously, and the world's largest. So we are going to work on updating our displays to meet those needs. And then enhancing the Next Generation Water Leader program. We are, as I mentioned, developing a new in-person program. We have developed or are working on an age-appropriate video to introduce not only Orange County Water District, but the GWRS. We're going to focus a bit in this program on water industry career opportunities, and that's twofold. The industry is obviously looking for ways to reach out to the younger generation and get people interested in careers, but we're also seeing a lot of teachers requesting that information about career opportunities and internships and that kind of thing to get their students at that age going. And it will also include a hands-on activity. So with that, I will be happy to answer any questions.
I also noticed in the boardroom, you have a group coming in from Rancho Santiago. And they have a water,
yes.
Program.
Certification program.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I thought that was really
yeah. cool. Yeah. We have a lot of participation from the local universities and community colleges. Very lucky.
Yeah. And with the interest, it's a good problem, but we don't have space. So we're trying to be creative about how to continue to accommodate the demand while also making the experience more engaging.
Yes.
Letitia?
Director Tran had his hand up briefly, so I'm not sure if he still has a question.
Director Tran?
I do have a question. With the international visitors, which countries are they from?
You know, primarily,
do we know? Or which region of the world?
primarily Korea. We do get quite a few groups from Korea, also Japan and China. We have
Singapore, Australia.
Yeah, there's just a few.
I'm curious, you know, given the, and we are very proud of course, of the technology and the work that we do here in Orange County. Have there been, I mean, with all the tours and visits from different sectors, you know, whether they are policymakers or industry leaders or even technicians in the water world, have any of these tours or visits resulted in collaborations or any, other than Singapore, which we seem to have a very good relationship with our counterparts, I haven't heard, and I wondered if whether we're providing any assistance or vice versa, have our guests requested assistance or consultation from us as far as water technology is concerned or the work on this. Maybe this is a question for John Kennedy.
Director Tran, we do routinely have Zoom calls with people from other countries to get into the details of the technology and how we operate the groundwater replenishment system. So that is happening. I know the Netherlands, we've had 4 or 5 workshops with them. Also getting into groundwater management. People from Greece have talked to us about PFAS and what we're doing there. So I know there's more. I'm just not remembering them off the top of my head.
Mexico, the Middle East.
It's good to know because, you know, we're it's best practices, and I we're touting ourselves, obviously, and that's why they're visiting our facilities, is to learn or to find out more on what we do and what type of technology we have and how up-to-date we are. And so I was wondering whether there was any follow-up on their part, reaching out to us, to our agency, for input or even consultation on all of these issues, related issues.
Yeah, for sure it's happening. Yeah. And they also want to talk with our research people with the type of membranes we're using and the type of membranes we're considering. The other day I got an email from people in Colombia. They want us to come down and talk about what we do. So, it is pretty active.
Yeah, no, maybe, John said, go ahead, Director, sorry.
Yeah, one last question. I apologize real quickly. Any opportunities to maybe monetize our services to these folks? Any thoughts of that, or we're not there yet as far as our engagements with them?
Yeah, we haven't really discussed it. We could. I'm not sure if we could do that or not. Might have to talk to our attorney also.
Thank you. Early on, when
I came on the board, there was discussion, and we decided, no, we truly wanted to be a leader and help people. And I haven't seen any change.
Yeah, and just to expand on John's, I think at the local level, too, a lot of agency collaborations coming here multiple times, whether it's Metropolitan, LADWP, LA County Sanitation District, with the Water Reuse Conference, we had all the folks who have pilot projects, Valley Water, San Diego, Ventura. So there continues to be a lot of interest and collaboration, not only on the engineering part, but also on the outreach. So we're collaborating with Water Reuse California, kind of sharing best practices when it comes to outreach. And then we continue to get a lot of other states too, whether it's like Mark Vallon's group from Nevada, just all over coming to learn more. And so that takes place here. But then, as John said, there's follow-up calls and then several staff that are also participating on kind of pilot groups or steering groups for these projects to share best practices and lessons learned.
Very good. Thank you.
Director Beledot, I notice you are on. Do you want to take over chairing
You know what? You're doing a fantastic job, Madam President. But thank you. But thank you for the offer. Sorry, I was slightly tardy.
Sure, no problem. Okay, moving on to Children's Water Education Festival update.
Thank you, Chair Green. We have Crystal Nettles, who helps oversee the festival, and the board recently approved a new location at Oak Canyon Park. So Crystal's going to give us an update on where we are with planning for the next festival.
Thank you, Gina. Good afternoon, everyone. So as all of you know, the Children's Water Education Festival is the district's largest event, and next year will mark our 28th year. It is a structured educational field trip for third, fourth, and fifth grade students. And since inception, over 150,000 Orange County students have been able to participate. And we have seen that number each year kind of grow since we've been back to an in-person event. Last year, we welcomed over 5,000 students, and we do expect that number to continue to grow as the years move on. As Gina mentioned, we are going to be at a new location this year, Oak Canyon Park in Silverado. It's a 17-acre park, a lot of flat, usable space, very close, abundant parking, nice private location. And this year, we will be hosting the event on Wednesday, April 23rd and Thursday, April 24th. And we're really excited about this date because in the past, when we were at UCI, we were really subject to when their spring break was. But we had a little bit of flexibility this year, so we were able to select a date that none of the school districts were on spring break. So we really hope to engage some of the students that haven't been able to participate in the past and some of the cities that haven't been able to participate in the past. Since our last update, a little bit has happened. We have sent out a save the date to nearly 2,000 teachers and staff, letting them know that registration is going to be opening on Tuesday, October 8th. And although registration is opening for all parties, traditionally it's the teachers that tend to sign up first and quite fast. But we are going to send out a reminder on Monday to let them know, since it is a first come, first serve event. In terms of next steps, we will be sending out a press release next week. It'll be targeted. We hope to, get some other agencies spreading the word, like the Department of Education has really been great about promoting the event in the past. We are going to be opening school registration, begin to solicit sponsorships and grants, as well as recruit volunteers and presenters. We are we're meeting regularly with Disney and James Events on the 15th. We do have a walkthrough of the site to kind of start planning layout. And then we will continue to present monthly updates at the committee meetings. And that concludes my update, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
No, see.
Okay.
Director Tran just raised his hand.
Okay, Director Tran.
Very quickly, if I may. With the move to the new venue, how much of a savings are we hoping or expecting as compared to the previous location at UC Irvine? Do we have an estimate?
Yeah, so off the top of my head, I can't remember the exact amount. I know it was under $200,000 for both the location as well as all of the rentals. You know, we rent hundreds and thousands that are, chairs, tables, things like that. Whereas if we had gone to UCI, it would have nearly eaten up our whole budget. So I want to say it was $50,000 cheaper or so to go to this location, but I'd have to go back and check for the specifics.
Yeah. And just to add, this is a budgeted, line item for the district. And I think it's a very lean event for the amount of students that we serve, over 5,000. We have over 7,000 people that are part of this. So what we saw last year is we weren't able to use hardly any funds for things other than facility and rentals. And so what we're hoping to do this next year is to make enhancements to the festival and the educational component. And so maybe beef up the curriculum more, which will attract more students and align with standards rather than having to focus on parking, rentals and that. So we definitely plan to stay within budget to offset by sponsorship and then also to save on the venue and parking.
Very good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Any other questions?
Okay, I know in the past we had like the Cousteau's kind of people from big universities and research areas and stuff. Do you think we'll ever get back to being able to afford something like that?
Maybe. Hopefully, yeah. The main reason, like Nat Geo came for many years, and they were a big hit, but we did get kind of priced out from having them. So I think that's definitely something to explore this year. We have continuously paid for some presenters that can really speak to 400 students at a time. So we're definitely going to explore more of that. But I hope so, because they were a big draw.
Yeah. Certainly worked for me.
I think changing venues allows us to do exactly that, target stronger educational content and exposure to careers.
Yeah, so, I mean, some of those programs out of this
enjoyed
world.
But the volunteers, presenters, everyone wanted to go see it.
Yeah, volunteers, can I go this way?
So, moving on to public affairs outreach report.
Thank you, Chair Green. So the report is in the packet. I would like to take the opportunity to highlight just a few items. As Kira mentioned, our tour program continues to be very robust, as well as our speakers bureau and then our outreach to chambers. So we are tracking that and participating when appropriate. Our media and stakeholder engagement for the month of September, our global reach was 78.1 million. So that's a noted increase from the fall of the previous month of 1,000%. So continuing to attract a lot of media here, whether it's local or global, and the GWRS and PFAST are continuing to get great coverage. Our social media presence also continues to increase with a lot of active engagement. Here's a sampling. Here's a sampling of some of our top news posts. So John was featured on a Water Leaders podcast just this morning. Mabel was featured on a We Grow California podcast talking about the GWRS and with the DPR regulations coming out or official, how much of a presence OCWD has in our project in kind of guiding and leading those regulations. And then for our PFAS coverage, we had NPR do a big national story. So that received a lot of hits as well and featured our producers in Anaheim and Yorba Linda. Our social media posts, we continue to be active and we continue to highlight a lot of our district events, milestones, and then have fun where appropriate with our mascot, Ginny Groundwater, trying to bring some humor to the platform. We will highlight this next week, October 5th through the 13th, is California Water Professionals Week. So we sent an email to our staff and we'll try to highlight them as best we can and all the great work they do. So we'll get photos, we have short videos, and a lot of our employee videos and posts tend to do quite well. We did host on September 9th, co-host with East Orange County Water District, the PFAS plant dedication for EOCWD, and then Director Van Tran attended and spoke on behalf of the district, and Director Weigand was also in attendance. So we took the opportunity to issue a joint release about that and how we're leading the way in addressing PFAS. Finally, the Orange County Water Summit was hosted last Friday, and about 300 people attended. Videos will be posted on the website in about a week or so. And then the committee will convene at some point and in the next month and kind of do a recap and provide some staff direction on next steps for planning for the next one. So upcoming events, wanted to mention that the district is participating in or leading. Lisa and her group are working on a series of sediment management workshops throughout the region. So there's three coming up for that. We have on October 22nd, the Linda Vista PFAS treatment plant. So Anaheim is leading that effort. And that will take place. All of our board is invited to attend. Kira mentioned our groundwater adventure tour on the 24th. I think President Green will give the welcome. All other board members are invited to participate or to take on a speaking role at some portion of the tour. And then we look forward to our next webinar on October 30th. And our speakers will include Lisa and Cheryl, as well as one of their colleagues who they're working with on optimizing water supply and sustainability through technological innovation. So that's kind of about Prado and the digital twin that they have that Lisa has presented on in the past. And that concludes my presentation. Happy to take any questions.
Any questions?
Great presentation. Thank you.
Welcome. Okay. Moving on, we don't really have anything to put on the agenda. Okay. Do we have any directors' announcements? General manager?
Nothing.
All right, we're adjourned.